Dr. Cedric Garland, welcome to Microscope.
Thank you.
In this interview, we wanted to talk about vitamin D, and our first question is, when did you discover that vitamin D prevents breast cancer and colorectal cancer?
We discovered it at the Johns Hopkins University in 1974, and we've spent the time since then confirming it.
And where were you located?
At the Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health in Baltimore, Maryland.
And did you have any partners in the discovery?
Yes. Dr. Frank Garland, the late Dr. Frank Garland, who was my brother, and Dr. Edward Gorham, G-O-R-H-A-M, who became our student and helped in the confirmation, particularly with respect to breast cancer.
And had anyone suspected a sunlight might be beneficial with respect to the disease?
You know, it goes back to Hippocrates, who suggested that people live on the south side of hills because they got more sunlight, and in general believed that sunlight was helpful to human health, but didn't connect it with cancer. And there wasn't much activity until 1890 when it was discovered that sunlight and vitamin D prevent rickets by Theodore Palm, which appeared in a journal called The Practitioner, back in 1890. And ultimately, Elmer McCollum at Johns Hopkins University, whose lab I eventually became, eventually took over, confirmed without question that vitamin D and sunlight can prevent rickets. And then in the 1940s, someone named Apperley noticed that there was a little less cancer in people who had a large exposure to the sun, sailors in the Navy, but did not connect it with vitamin D. And then in 1974, we finally put it all together and concluded that not only was sunlight that was preventing certain cancers, particularly the breast and colon, but that it was specifically vitamin D, which is photosynthesized in response to sunlight, that was preventing these cancers.
And how did you prove your theory?
Well, it started with showing maps of the United States, with analyzing maps of the United States that were created as part of the United States of America War on Cancer. And it was decided that one of the earliest steps in that war on cancer was to measure the death rate from each type of cancer in the 3,056 counties of the United States. So the National Cancer Institute, under then-President Richard Nixon, decided to make these maps, and they showed the incidence rate or the mortality rate from cancer in men and women in each of the different counties. And these were presented at Johns Hopkins University by Dr. Robert N. Hoover of the National Cancer Institute, and my brother Frank Garland and I were in the audience at the seminar where they were first presented outside of the National Institutes of Health. And we saw that the rates of colon cancer were twice as high in the northern tier of the United States as in the southern, and it was very similar for breast cancer, much higher death rates in the northern tier of the United States, such as Boston and north of Boston, and very low in the southern tier, particularly in Arizona, New Mexico, Southern California, places that have the maximum amount of sunlight. Well, at that moment, we had just driven across America. This was my first job. We had driven through the sunniest areas imaginable, and we knew almost by intuition that it was probably the intensity of the sunlight in the regions that were that had the lowest rates of breast and colon cancer, and the absence of such bright solar irradiance in the northern part of the United States that accounted for it, just as it did a century before for rickets. And to us, that's how we proved it. But we ended up having to show this was true in several countries. We did it in the United States and published a paper on that. We found it was exactly the same in the former Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR, had just the same north-south distribution found it was true in the country of Italy and in the country of Canada, and we published papers on these topics and began to confirm that it was not just overall in the United States, but it was a worldwide phenomenon. And since then, we've published a number of papers parsing out the reason for this, and it's mainly but differences in latitude, but also cloud cover. In places, even at warm latitudes that have a lot of cloud cover, can have high rates of these two cancers. And the other factor is air pollution. If there's a lot of air pollution from burning of high sulfur coal, that will provide what we call acid haze. It's a component in the atmosphere that blocks the transmission of ultraviolet B from the sun. And unfortunately, ultraviolet B is the wavelength that converts cholesterol to vitamin D3, and it's vitamin D3 that whose metabolites prevent the cancers. So if there's a huge amount of air pollution, the ultraviolet B can't get through, the people become vitamin D deficient, and then they develop a high risk of breast and colon cancer. So that's how we started, but ultimately we collected blood from 25,620 people in a suburb of Washington, D.C., Washington County, Maryland. And we followed them for 8 years. We froze their blood. We collected their blood, froze it, took off the serum, froze the serum in freezers in Maryland, and waited about 7 years. In about 7 years, we froze the sera and waited 7 years. And during that time, there were about 30 or 40 cases that developed of colorectal cancer. And we thawed the serum and analyzed it for vitamin D in the laboratory of Dr. Michael Hollick and Dr. Tai Chin at Boston University, and all done blindly. And the results of the study came up that people that had a high level of 25-hydroxyvitamin D in their blood, the main circulating vitamin D metabolite, were at only about a fifth the risk of colorectal cancer as people who had a very low level of this metabolite. And the analysis was done using high-performance liquid chromatography and ultraviolet absorbance detection, and kicked off this field of studies of the relationship between 25-hydroxyvitamin D and risk of colon and rectum and breast cancer. And so that was one way that we proved it. The other was that we established a collegial relationship with the University of Chicago, who some 19 years before had collected blood from 1,956 Western Electric telephone assemblers and had determined their intake of vitamin D, their oral intake of vitamin D. And over a period of 2 years, we analyzed those data as a historical prospective study, and found that people who consumed more vitamin D, more than 150 international units a day, and that's about 100 micrograms, were at only half the risk of colorectal cancer over time. And both of these papers were published in the Lancet, one in 1985 and one in 1989. And then the field really really got rolling from there. And we continued to publish papers on cohorts that we were studying or international comparisons. And it gave us the opportunity to confirm it in six different ways with different types of studies. So, and then ultimately a clinical trial was done and published in 2007 by Joan Lappe, the late Robert Haney, and their colleagues, that found that people who consumed vitamin D, they consumed 1,100 international units per day, and calcium, 1,500 milligrams per day, had, after a one-year run-in period, only one-fifth the incidence of cancer. It's all invasive cancers combined, which is to say that it prevents 80% of all cancers. And that was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition in 2007 by a group from Creighton University. and finally confirmed after some 30 years of research in a randomized controlled clinical trial that vitamin D prevents invasive cancers. The effect was strongest for the breast and the colon and the lung, but also included several other cancers. Overall, the difference was highly statistically significant, but the sample size was not large enough to say that independently for each of the cancers, the incidence was reduced. So the investigators repeated the study, and they're now analyzing the results. And there's also another randomized controlled clinical trial whose results will be analyzed in the next couple of years, the VITAL trial, which is underway at Harvard University under the direction of Joanne Manson and Julie Buring.
And how does vitamin D prevent breast cancer?
The way that it does it is by preventing the tumor from forming a new blood supply. It prevents what's called neoangiogenesis, which is the formation by tumors of a blood supply. And it happens that in breast cancer, when the tumor gets up to about a centimeter or so in diameter, it releases vascular endothelial growth factor and other compounds that cause capillaries to grow into it and provide it with a rich supply of blood. Once that happens, the tumor gets larger. It becomes evident on mammography as the good part, but as the bad part is that it is capable then of metastasis and begins spreading to distant sites, first the lymph nodes and ultimately the liver, the bone, and the brain. But if the tumor never gets this blood supply, if it's denied a blood supply at that point, it will not metastasize. And if left long enough, it will develop a level of anoxia that will cause it to regress and die, or there is even autolysis of the cells consuming each other to the point where there's no viable tissue remaining to metastasize, and that is a consequence of being having a vitamin D level in the blood, specifically 25-hydroxyvitamin D, that it's very high. But when about 25-hydroxyvitamin D concentration in the blood is very low, it is easy for the growing tumor to form or recruit a big blood supply and to nourish itself and to grow and metastasize. So it's quite late in the process of carcinogenesis. The tumor may be a number of years old before the vitamin D begins to have its effect. But once it does, it causes the tumor to ultimately shrink, regress, and under the best of circumstances, die. And this work, we have a meta-analysis published by Moore et al. Showing that this happens even once the cancer has been diagnosed, that the process of denying a blood supply to it will limit its growth and play an important role in combination therapy for breast cancer that includes monitoring the vitamin D and keeping it at a high level to keep the blood vessels from growing into the tumor and letting it metastasize.
What are the main sources of vitamin D?
Well, for most people, it's exposure to the sun. That's where it has come from throughout evolution. 4 photons of sunlight in the range from 297 to 310 nanometers, which is the terrestrial ultraviolet B irradiance, combined with one molecule of 7-dehydrocholesterol, which is a very common cholesterol compound in the skin, to form one molecule of vitamin D. And it takes about 10 minutes for each square inch or square centimeter of skin that's exposed to the sun to make the amount it can make in a given day. It's a saturable process. But if a lot of the skin is exposed, such as 40% of the skin, then there will be enough synthesis of vitamin D in the summer to make it possible to synthesize enough vitamin D to be important in this process. But for most people, it is irrelevant in a sense because we wear clothing that blocks 92% of the skin surface. Wearing typical street clothing only allows 8% of the skin to be exposed, blocking 90% of the biosynthesis of vitamin D. And then when we get in the sun, many people wear a UVB absorbing sunscreen that prevents sunburn, but unfortunately, even better, prevents the biosynthesis of vitamin D. So for some people, it comes down to diet. And if they're fishermen, for example, who eat a huge amount of surface-dwelling fish, such as anchovies and sardines, predatory fish, they can get enough from the fish. But most people cannot even get enough from fish. There's a little bit in eggs and a little bit in meats. Ultimately, the only way to get enough is to take a supplement.